Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for joining me for the May 2023 episode of Power Word Talk. I am your best parasocial friend, Tali Viezer of Cast Party. I'm here with a wonderful panel of guests this evening. Cast Party Dungeon Master Rachel Savicki.
Hello, hello.
Longtime friend of Cast Party, Deborah Paradise.
Hi, y'all.
And from Young Dragon Slayers, Katie Lear.
Hello, hello.
Thank you all so much for joining me this evening. We're going to discuss Dungeons and Dragons in the pandemic era this evening. That'll be the main event, both how COVID changed Dungeons and Dragons for everyone and how it changed it for you specifically. But before we get into that, some real quick housekeeping and news segments to get through. And I don't have Matt or Luke here to force them to sing the jingle. So Deborah, that means you're going to have to sing the news jingle to let the audience know that we're in the news segment.
I feel so honored, Tal. And it's the news, it's the news, it's the news, it's the news.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Deborah. We're now in the news segment. So we got some changes to the release dates for some of the upcoming official 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons books for the rest of this year. I'll just quickly run through those. Bigby Presents, Glory of the Giants, which was originally supposed to be released this spring, has been delayed until August 15th. Phandelver and Below, The Shattered Obelisk, we have a release date of September 19th. That was advertised as coming out in summer 2023, and I guess September 19th is still summer. Planescape, Adventures in the Multiverse, the release date is October 16th, and The Book of Many Things, which was originally advertised for summer 2023, is now coming out on November 14th. So we're in a little bit of a dry period here as far as official releases. We got Keys from the Golden Vault in March, and then no books released from April through July, and then a book a month from August through November, which is a curious publishing schedule, and I'm sure not the way that they planned it. We don't really know what happened that caused these delays, whether it was more on the physical production end or whether there was some redesign and reworking of these books. We also have the covers out for most of the books, and Book of Many Things comes with a really cool deck of many things that's like huge oversized cards and a big box and some really beautiful artwork to go along with the book. They also announced a $10 price increase. So the MSRP for the hardcover books moving forward is going to be $59.95. So that's a $10 price increase. It is the first hardcover price increase since 2015. Honestly, I don't know too many things that cost the same today that they cost in 2015. Nobody is thrilled about a price increase, but I also think that this is not one of these things that's like the worst example of late stage capitalism. It's been a long time since they increased the prices of the physical books, and it's sad, but I get it. They're not increasing the prices of the digital books. That's the D&D Beyond versions. And they're also not raising the prices of any of the older books that are still in print. This will just be the new books coming out, starting with Bigby Presents, Glory of the Giants. And finally, the only other piece of news. Some of the listeners may have read this already on our Discord or our social media or our website. This is Cast Party News. Beginning in October 2023, we're launching a new actual play series. This is presented by Cast Party and sponsored by our friends at EN World Publishing. And we're working with their Level Up Advanced 5th Edition. They just finished this massive $100,000 Kickstarter for a new adventure book called To Save a Kingdom. And to celebrate the publication of that epic new hardcover adventure, Cast Party will be returning to Holdenshire to face haunted castles, the madness of a fairy queen, the lost secrets of dwarven ruins, and the greatest threat of all, the dreaded dragon Cirith, ruler of Skull Mountain and tyrant of the desolation. This is a new actual play series. It'll be releasing in both podcast form and on YouTube. It will use the Level Up Advanced 5th Edition rules to enhance a classic Dungeons & Dragons 5e experience. I will be the Dungeon Master for this one, so this will be the first longer series that we've done where I've been the DM. Matt Gordon, who's the DM of Descent into Avernus and also did Memories of Holdenshire, will get to be a player in this campaign. While you are waiting for the new show, The summer might be a great time for a rewatch or a re-listen to Podcast Party Memories of Holdenshire, which is the previous miniseries that we did that was sponsored by Level Up A5E. That serves as a prequel for To Slay a Dragon. This series will be a lot longer than that one. And I have gotten some questions because we're launching this new series in October. I've gotten a few people asking me, does that mean that Descent into Avernus will be wrapping up in October? And the answer is basically no. That's we are going to continue Descent into Avernus until it comes to its natural ending point. So if that means that we're releasing both shows alternating for a while, we'll continue to play through Descent into Avernus until we reach the end of it. That said, I think you, the listener, probably heard about 75% of the Descent into Avernus series at this point. So we're in the home stretch, but we've got some stuff to go. I will pop the links to Memories of Holdenshire in the show notes for this episode for anybody who wants to go back and listen to that series. And that is it, but I will ask you folks, any reaction to the reshuffling of the official 5e release schedule for the rest of the year and to the $10 price increase on the hardcover books?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, it certainly is an interesting change in schedule to have so many things that are going to come out so close together, you know, basically one a month. And I have to wonder if this is, you know, kind of the get everything out there before the end of the year rush. And then, you know, hopefully we're going to be seeing some exciting new stuff next year. As far as the price increase, when I first heard about it, when somebody first told me about it, it was kind of just like, shrug, okay, I guess I'm still going to buy the things in hard copy that I was going to buy in hard copy anyway.
Yeah.
So like, yes, I guess I'm paying $10 more for it now.
Deborah, how about you? Your reaction to any of this?
I mean, yeah, like you said, what still costs the same amount from 2015 in today's market economy? So again, like Rachel, I will be biting the bullet in what I was going to be purchasing. I'll be purchasing with the additional $10 markup. I'm going to say I'm right there with Rachel. Maybe this is we're throwing all the things at you so that you can buy them before Christmas mm-hmm. and holiday season is upon us. By no means do I have a degree in marketing or advertising or any of those things that would make this more clear to people. But I will say, because we are in this lull, if you have not checked out Keys from the Golden Vault, it's a fantastic book that
really good.
We've had a lot of fun with. And I know I've played some stuff here with Cast Party from it, and I've seen it other places. And if you haven't checked it out, you've got months until something else comes out. So go take a look.
Katie, have you had a chance to play or run anything from Keys to the Golden Vault?
I have not, but this has been a great pitch for it. I'm intrigued now.
I really do recommend it as far as like the compilations of the official short adventures that they've released. They're all pretty good. I liked Candlekeep Mysteries. Then I liked Journeys Through the Radiant Citadel even better. And I'd say I like Keys from the Golden Vault even better than Journeys to the Radiant Citadel. So they're going from strength to strength there, I think.
The timing of this is excellent. The timing of this is excellent for me thinking about possible stuff to run this summer. So I'm happily taking notes.
And are you livid about the $10 price increase?
I am not. Oh. I am not. I mean, I think as far as publishing schedules, the gods work in mysterious ways. Who can say? But I feel like this month in particular has been the month that every service that I get and every product that I subscribe to has announced a fee increase. So I'm just sort of like, you know,
yep.
You got me there. I agree with you. I don't think this is a nefarious scheme to get more money out of us.
Yeah. Max, the one to watch for HBO, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, very good. Deborah, please take us out of the news segment.
That was the news. That was the news. That was the news. That was the news.
Awesome. Thank you, Deborah. Moving on to the main event, we're going to talk about Dungeons & Dragons in the COVID era. Now, I sort of had the idea to do this episode this month because the state of emergency for the COVID-19 pandemic, as you know, in the United States, ended, quote unquote, earlier in May. And I want to say right up front, that's just not me, Tal Aviaser, making the official announcement that the COVID-19 pandemic is over and you should all go about your business. It's obviously, it's still a huge problem and a concern for many people. I've got a couple of friends who have long COVID symptoms and other friends who are immunocompromised. And this is remains an issue for them, and it's still a disease that we don't know everything about. So I'm not trying to do this episode by way of throwing a party that the pandemic is over, but officially the state of emergency in the United States has ended. And I think most of us can agree the situation is dramatically improved, and it feels like we have this year in 2023 shifted into a very quite different phase of the pandemic. And, you know, at least for my part, and I know for many others as well, have resumed a lot of activities that we had, you know, paused during the COVID era. COVID had a profound effect on the game of Dungeons and Dragons. And before we get into hearing about your personal experiences with it, I just want to throw out some industry research and facts and effects that I pulled together to give kind of a snapshot of what happened with Dungeons and Dragons, the game, as a product during this period. So in 2020, the first year of the pandemic, Dungeons and Dragons sales jumped 33%, adding to what was already a six-year growth streak for the game. Overall revenue for Wizards of the Coast rose 24% in 2020 and topped $816 million. And before the pandemic was over, Wizards of the Coast would be, the revenue was in excess of $1 billion for the first time in company history. In 2020, Hasbro reported that Wizards' operating profit was $420.4 million with a 46% operating profit margin, which is crazy. You know, those of us that are not glued to the Wall Street Journal or our business news every day, making a 46% profit on your business is very, very unusual. So Hasbro was making 46 cents for every dollar in sales that Wizards achieved. By contrast, for example, Hasbro's consumer products division, that includes like Hasbro, the toys that Hasbro makes and the board games that Hasbro makes and sells in toy stores, that had an operating profit of $308 million, but the profit margin was only 8%. So way worse than Wizards of the Coast. In 2020, Hasbro posted a net income of $222.5 million on a revenue of $5.47 billion. I also looked into Roll20 a little bit, and Rachel, you may be able to speak to this even better than me. Dean Bigby, who's the director of operations for Roll20, said that during the first few days of the news of the virus coming out globally, at the top of every hour, all the alarms were going off inside Roll20, which is an online tabletop gaming platform, as you know. The amount of new account requests were so high that the systems thought that they were under a denial of service attack.
So I was not with them when that happened. I did not join them until after the pandemic had, you know, after that initial wave.
Yeah.
But that's hilarious.
Yeah. They figured out that the requests were legitimate. And what was interesting, he said, was the first spike in account requests came from Italy and then from France. And the requests followed the paths of the lockdowns as they spread, like as each country locked down, there would be a huge increase in Roll20 accounts. Roll20 saw a triple digit increase in the number of users from March 2020 to March 2022. That's according to their COO, Corey Roseman. The pandemic drove thousands of Dungeons and Dragons enthusiasts online. There was Wizards did a survey in 2020, and more than 90% of the players who responded said they'd played online, compared to just over 50% in 2019. You know, a massive change in the way that we played the game. So I think that the stories I'm about to hear from you folks are probably going to mirror some elements of this. And I know there are probably some of us who had not played before at all prior to the pandemic, and some of whom were playing, and the way we played changed. So I'm actually going to ask Rachel first.
Yeah.
What was Rachel doing with D&D in like 2019?
So prior to the pandemic, I was already GMing professionally, but I was through a local game shop. Mm-hmm. So I was running Adventurers League or a long form campaign. I was probably running, I'm going to say, 2 days a week, 3 days a week, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And of course, if it was on the weekends, we would have multiple flights of games on a Saturday or a Sunday. So I had a regular, you know, one night a week long form campaign. And then, like I said, I was doing Adventurers League here and there, but it was all like in person in the store. So yeah, that's where I was until the pandemic shut down the store.
Right. Did you have any online clients prior to the shutdowns at all?
No.
When did you pivot?
When the store shut down. Okay. So a lot of the people who had been playing with us at the store became basically my first set of online clients, mm-hmm. and hired me to run things via Roll20.
And I'm trying to think when you started running games for us. Feels like it's been a long time now.
I want to say it's about 2 years. So I had been running independently online for, I'm going to say, 6-9 months before I jumped on with you guys.
What was the, kind of know the answer to this question. I'm trying to not ask it in a leading way.
Sure.
What function did Dungeons & Dragons serve for you during the pandemic? And I mean both like personally, but and also professionally. Like, what did it mean to you what did the game come to mean to you during that time?
As a professional GM, it is very much the thing that most people find most accessible. Mm-hmm. You know, if you sit down and say, oh, I want to get a bunch of players together for this next campaign that I'm running that's Dungeons & Dragons, people are like, okay, I know what that is. I feel like I can jump in. I can jump in on a one-shot.
The lingua franca of the TTRPG space, right? You can't necessarily like shoot up a flare and say, everyone come play Shadowrun with me and expect to get a full table.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's very much the, it is the common game. It's the great way to get to know new players, because people feel like they can jump in and play and not have the system be an obstacle. And then, you know, maybe after they've played some Dungeons & Dragons, we'll be like, okay, yeah, maybe I do want to try some Shadowrun or, you know, something else.
Sure.
So it's very much a, you know, it's a great gateway. Oh, I was going to say, as far as personally, like it's, you know, it's very much the high fantasy, like nostalgia factor is still there for me. Mm-hmm. So always fun sharing that with new people.
And now it feels like I've been following your adventures in the real world, and it kind of feels like particularly this year, there's been a real return to physical spaces in terms of you're going to conventions. You just got back from pro GMing on a cruise, right? On like a D&D
I did.
Cruise.
Yep.
So what is that like? Like after that feels like must be a big culture shock in a way.
Definitely. So I had been GMing at conventions. I just started GMing at conventions in 2019. I went with Cubicle 7's group to Origins and Gen Con, and was running Adventures in Middle Earth and The One Ring, which so Adventures in Middle Earth is the 5e Lord of the Rings system that was put out by Cubicle 7. So I was running the two of those at conventions in 2019 and like was gearing up to do it in 2020. And then 2020 happened and everything shut down and the conventions didn't happen. So then like it very much was like in 2019, I was the little itty bitty baby GM who was just starting to do this and like just had my toe in the pool. And then as things have reopened in the past year, I'm now coming back with all of this experience of, you know, I've been running things for the past couple years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've gotten in on a couple games here and there, which is always great. It's great to, you know, especially I love that conventions let you try new systems and just, you know, commit a couple hours and see what this other game is. And it's just people seem to be very enthusiastic about, you know, getting out and getting back into things. The cruise was really cool. They're very much just ramping things up for, you know, doing more of those kinds of things in the future. I was GMing with the D20 Cruise. Their company is Event Cruises. And so basically what they do is it was a 5-day cruise. We left from LA. And while we were on the ship, everybody who was part of the cruise got a session a day, basically, of D&D. And then there's a whole bunch of fan run events throughout the weekend. There were a whole bunch of workshops. And of course, it's a cruise. So you do all the cruise stuff. Right. We stopped at a couple ports. It was a great time. Met some fantastic people who are a lot of fun. And they're gearing up to do it again next year. So
how many DMs did they bring on the ship?
I want to say it was about 12.
Okay.
Yeah. And so each of us had two groups. We had a daytime group and an evening group. A couple of, you know, nice small little groups. Both of my groups were 4 people. It's a very nice, intimate little table kind of environment. It's not, you know, it's not a huge, you know, group, and everybody knew when they were going to be there. So there's no like jockeying for tables or anything like that. And yeah, it was a great time.
Awesome. Good for you. And congratulations for that gig, by the way. That sounded like a lot of fun.
Thank you. Yeah.
Deborah, just shifting over to you. Am I correct in thinking that you started playing like within the past 3 years?
Yeah. So pre-pandemic, Deborah was a little, it's so funny when I tell this to people because they're like, you're in the sweet spot. You were a theater nerd and you were a book nerd and you didn't play D&D. And I'm like, nope, I had no idea what it was until like 2018, 2019. And so I got into D&D because I was listening to the Adventure Zone and then slowly made my way over to other things like Critical Role, Dimension 20. So I was like watching or listening to a lot of stuff, but I wasn't playing. And then COVID happened, and then we all went indoors. And I was still watching and listening to all these things, but I had a friend. I had moved to New York. I had been living in Boston for a while, and I had moved to New York. And because everyone was stuck at home, everyone was reaching out to people and, you know, building those connections back that they had maybe lost over time. And I had a friend who reached out from when I was living in Boston, who was like, hey, you want to play some Dungeons and Dragons? I've got a group starting up. And I was like, well, I've got nothing else to do with my life right now. Sure.
And I feel like maybe your first in-person game back was a cast party event. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So the first time I played Dungeons and Dragons in person with people was cast party at Antoinette's. Mm-hmm. For a Waterdeep one-shot, where I was very, very spoiled with a wonderful selection of minis and terrain and like battle maps. I was like, oh, now I get why people play with minis.
Right.
I get this now.
So it's actually funny to hear you say that because a couple of my players on the cruise, it was also their first time playing in person. Mm-hmm. So you are not the only person who had that experience.
Yes, it was very funny to be like, oh, can I just touch the owlbear? Can I just like touch it? Can I pick it up?
Yeah, can I move it around the map? Like, that's fun.
So I wanted to ask Rachel, you're someone, you know, DM whose experience was primarily physical prior to COVID.
Oh, entirely. Yeah. Yeah. I had played around with Roll20 a little bit prior to COVID, but not, I had never like committed to running a campaign online or anything like that.
So now that you have the option of returning to physical play, I'm just curious, like, what percentage of your games are physical now?
Right now, just the cruise and convention stuff.
Right.
It's basically just special events right now.
So, like, there's no week-to-week physical games app. Yeah.
And that might change.
Yeah.
So, actually, I just found out that there is a gaming cafe that is literally just opened this week, like, 20 minutes from me. That is going to have like rooms that are designed to cater to like the experience of a very fancy D&D game.
Uh-huh.
So I'm very curious to go see what they have, you know, set up and everything once they're a little bit more up and rolling.
To do it.
So, I mean, I talk to a bunch of game shops because I like games and yep. trading cards and all of that, you know. Yeah, I've definitely seen the in-person play scene pick up a lot just at many different places. You know, I've seen a couple different places actually host that they were looking for GMs to come in. So it definitely, it is back up and rolling in a lot of places. And it seems to be, from what I've been hearing from, you know, some of the people who work in the game shops still, you know, it seems to be bigger than it was before the pandemic at this point for a lot of them.
Katie, are you also someone who started playing during the pandemic?
I started playing right before the pandemic. So mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. 2019 was my first year of play. I've been gasping in solidarity here as people have been telling their stories, because I think there's a lot of overlap for me of like someone who had been a real theater kid, been in the theater scene for a long time and was listening to the Adventure Zone, but had assumed that it was something that was not mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. But I got pushed into that a little bit prior to the pandemic because I moved. So I guess in a way, maybe I was having some of that social isolation before the rest of the world because I had moved to a new state and a new town. So I started playing then, but had not imagined that it would become a central part of my life and my work the way that it is now.
So was it then a question of your physical group moving online?
Yeah. So we had been a physical group. And honestly, you know, I was thinking about things that I miss about in-person play, and like the tactile element, certainly, the minis, certainly, you know, it's more immersive, but I like honestly really missed the snacks. Like we were a very pizza, a pizza and brownie based group. And I really appreciated that about us. And that was the hardest, that was the hardest change for me, was like foregoing the snacks before and after, after our game.
When did the transition between something you did socially as a fun activity and something that you realized had professional applications happen?
That was a direct result of COVID. That was a direct result of the lockdown for me. I was no longer in theater by the time COVID happened. I was a therapist in my own private practice and was just seeing this immense need for connection and socialization and some semblance of a routine and something that kids could look forward to that would allow them to start to work through feelings in some sort of indirect way in this really tough time. And I was very much leaning on my own group for that kind of social, emotional release weekly outlet. So that was when the pivot turned for me, but I had not imagined that that pivot would be quite as permanent as it has turned out to be.
Has your group that you were playing with in person in 2019 continued as an online group?
Tragically, no. Tragically, I think the return to civilization and the end of lockdown for everybody was sort of the slow death sentence of that group, partially because during COVID, many of our group members moved away.
Sure.
So we had become more geographically distant. So the option to go back to in-person wasn't really there. And then once people's jobs and lives and schedules picked up, it got harder and harder to keep that weekly game. So I keep the faith alive that someday we'll come back to the table, but I don't know that we will. I have poached at least one of those members to work for us in our company, so I get to see him. And he has half joked, but I think half seriously said that for his bachelor party, he's going to force us to all get back together and finish the game. And I'm here for it.
I have a similar situation. So I did the math today, and I realized I currently have 27 players across 4 regular games that I'm running, but one of those groups started as an in-person game in January 2020. So we had about 2 months of in-person play, and we moved online during the pandemic. And I think much like your group, during the course of the pandemic, people relocated, babies were born, people are now at different jobs in different states. And that is a game that there were 7, there are now 8 players in that game. 7 women and 1 guy and me. 100%, if that was an in-person game, would have dissolved ages ago. But because it's an online game, that same group of people that started playing together in January 2020 is still playing together. And I think it's great because that they're not, I think some of us might not speak to each other regularly all that much, except that we're still doing this weekly game. So it's become a framework for maintaining a really valuable friendship and provided a context for getting together and, you know, doing all sorts of other D&D related, non-D&D related things. And this summer, they're actually bringing me on a 3-day camping trip. So this actually reminds me a little bit of the cruise experience that Rachel had. So it's
okay.
They're calling it Dragon Camp. And we're renting 2 cabins for 3 days. And I'm supposed to just run games for like the whole going. It's like beach, walk in the woods, go to the nature preserve, maybe find a restaurant, but mostly just like camping and playing Dungeons and Dragons. So the in-person game has become the special occasion or the special event thing, you know,
right,
that I'll do like maybe got one coming up in July that's at a cafe near me. You know, maybe once a month I'm running an in-person cast party thing as like an event, or I'm taking like a private in-person game, you know, going to somebody's house and running a game. But it's difficult to see ever returning to a regular weekly in-person game, you know, unless it's like a, you know, cafe or gaming, you know, situation like that where Somebody wants to bring me in one day a week to do something like that. If it works for my schedule, I would do it.
I want to echo something, Tal, that you said earlier, which is I'm thinking about maybe like what my longest playing game is. And like this game would not work had we not all hopped online for Dungeons and Dragons during the pandemic, because
yeah,
this long-term game, we're spanning multiple continents, like 5 time zones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we made it work, you know, during the pandemic, and like different countries were doing different things and in different places. And even though everything's been ramping up and we've had, you know, we've had weeks or stretches or months where we go on a lull, like, you know, we just started picking up again, literally today, being like, hey, maybe in a couple of weeks, like, let's start pulling together people. Like, when are we going to all be able to be online together? When are the schedules going to sync?
Right.
And I don't think I would have gotten to play with as many different people had I been narrowly pigeonholed into what is in my direct location, what can I get to within a 1 hour distance of where I live. So I will say if anything good has come from the changes that have come through Dungeons and Dragons, and, you know, maybe not all the changes are changes that we're all in love with, but I will say this one is one that I'm really happy for.
Yeah. I also, like, just to jump in, you know, one of my longest running personal groups that I run for online, they brought me in right at the beginning of the pandemic, and we played all the way through Descent into Avernus. We finished it, I think, like last November. So it was like a 2.5 year campaign where we played every week. And like that would not have been possible without the online, you know, the switch to online, just because, you know, because it's online, it means that, you know, if somebody has a business trip, if somebody is, you know, traveling for, you know, whatever other reason, you know, they can still play. We have one player who pretty regularly is calling in from the car while she's going somewhere.
Right.
Who's still like, she will be there every Thursday. It's just, you know, we don't know where she physically is necessarily, but she'll be with us. And it's great that we can still have that connectivity. And it's also let us like actually run long form campaigns that would have died long before, you know, they got to completion otherwise.
I have to agree with that. The consistency of online play, with my personal group being the outlier of like, I think other pandemic related life changes were the nail in the coffin for that group, like pandemic babies, pandemic returns to grad school, pandemic job changes, all those other good things. But in general, I think what you lose in, I don't know, the sensory experience of being physically around the table, you make up for in ease of scheduling, which was like always the hardest part of those in-person games, and accessibility. If you are not feeling well, you can still go. If you don't have childcare, you can still go. If you move to another state, you can still go. You know, even if it's only 80% as exciting as an in-person game, if you're doing that 80% every single week or every other week, I do think it's a good trade-off.
The online experiences happens more reliably than an in-person one does. For my part, my 2019 D&D experience. So I'd played Dungeons & Dragons as a child from like fifth grade until really through high school, and then not at all for more than 20 years until I'm a professional actor. I run a small theater company in New York. And in 2017, some of my friends, and especially some of the younger actors that were involved with the theater company, were really into D&D. And, you know, got me back into it. And I started playing socially. And then we did like a mini convention at our theater in the Bronx. That was we did it as a fundraiser for a charity called Midnight Run, which is like a homeless outreach organization in New York. And we did that annually, I think 2017, 2018, 2019. And it was a deal where people came, they paid $5 or $10, and they played Dungeons and Dragons games with the actors that they had seen, you know, at our theater. Either as fellow players or some of the actors were DMs, and we would get, you know, like maybe 100 people. And then at the end of the evening, there was, you know, what I would now call like a performance style game, like where we're, you know, where a bunch of actors sat up there, like it's the Last Supper with a DM, you kind of facing the audience. And we kind of played and amused, you know, did like a funny one shot for like 90 minutes or something. And gradually from those charity events, came, you know, sort of Cast Party formed as a splinter or sister company to Red Monkey Theater Group, which is the theater company. And what we really intended to do was bring our experience as theater professionals to the game as a live experience. So the idea is we would kind of do these high-end D&D games with all the bells and whistles at some of the site-specific locations where we're already doing theater, like these mansions and historic houses and things like that. And we would get actors would play NPCs, and there'd be live musicians, and the props department would make props, and we would do costumes, and designers would do the terrain, and, you know, we'd have lights and all the bells and whistles and shit. And also, the idea behind the show was we would shoot like a Critical Role style actual play show at the theater, because we had all the lights and, you know, we could do the cool effects, and it was already wired for sound, and it was all going to work. And the plan was, so we did our first live event at Bartow Pell Mansion Museum on February 23rd, 2020. That was like our debut. Ooh. As like, yeah, where this live event in person, it was like you got a 5-course dinner, game moved like all throughout the mansion, this historic house. Like, there were different encounters in every room of the mansion. There were live actor NPCs. There was live music. There was like all this. And we're like, this is great. So this is going to be like really expensive for us to create all of this shit for this event. But you know what? We're going to use it so many times because we're going to be running so many of this. We're going to rerun this live event so many times over the next couple of years. So that was, and then like 2 weeks later, everything was done. And I remember for me, you know, a lot of people talk about how, like, when the NBA announced they were suspending the season, that's when COVID felt real for them. And I very distinctly remember it was actually like when Critical Role announced that they were suspending the live broadcast of the show. And I'm like, oh dear, this is serious. They are stopping Critical Role. That was sort of the like, oh, this is not okay signal for me. And, you know, it was grim. I'm in New York. We all know how bad it was here. I was very fortunate that, you know, my job was not, I was just able to work from home, and I'm a writer, so that really didn't affect me. My wife was an essential worker, so she was still going in. Carrie, you know, from also in Cast Party, she was still going in. As a professional actor, I suddenly had a lot of time on my hands. wasn't a lot of theater going on. So I was sitting here, I was like reading Sherlock Holmes stories and putting them on YouTube to just have something to send out to our people who had tickets to see shows that weren't going to happen. I saw all of these people sacrificing so much to help other people. And I always knew that, like, fuck, when the zombie apocalypse comes, my skill set is worthless. Like, what am I going to, like, nobody's going to need me to write a press release at the end of the world, right? Like, what useful thing can I really contribute to this situation that's going to help people? And I very quickly realized that the answer to that was that I could DM. So for the first 4 or 5 months of the pandemic, I would run at least a game a day. I'd say like most evenings I was running for somebody. So I was probably at 50 people or 60 people for whom I was regularly running games, because I could sense that it was very important and very helpful and was probably the most helpful thing that I could be doing. And I didn't, you know, charge anything for that. It seemed horrible at the time and also some of them were, you know, kids that were at the college where our theater company had the residency. Like, they were not going to be able to pay somebody to DM for them, but they were just stuck. So I ran for them. I got me reconnected with a lot of people I hadn't spoken to, and people came out of the woodwork when they heard that I was doing it. So more and more people wanted Dungeons and Dragons games, and it felt, you know, I felt like it was useful. Which was, you know, was useful, productive, and got people out of themselves and got me out of myself to do it. It was cathartic, right? It was an escape. And it also, I had been playing quite casually. I had DM'd, I had pro DM'd prior to it, but it taught me to tailor myself to so many different styles and to run such a rigorous schedule and hit deadlines as a pro DM and sort of have a work ethic as a pro DM that just hadn't been necessary before. But that period was like boot camp for like handling Dungeons and Dragons games, like managing, and then more games that I could run, which is, and that, so anyway, long story short, that's how Cast Party started running online games, because there were more people who wanted them that I could run for personally. So, you know, it became pretty clear that there would need to be a crew of DMs available to take all of these games, because no one person could do it. So that's how, you know, awesome DMs like Rachel Savicki got involved with us. I think Rachel, I saw a face, because I think we knew each other tangentially because we're both DMs Guild creators. So I think we were sort of in some of the same online groups. And I think I saw a post from you that was basically something like, somebody give me something to do. Like, it wasn't in those words, but it was like, do you have something for me to do? Like, I want to do something.
Yeah. So it was actually, when you had messaged me, it was after I had, so I had had two almost full-time jobs that had both been remote. Mm-hmm. And one of my two almost full-time jobs got terminated because of pandemic reasons.
Yeah.
So it was very much a like, well, like, now what do I, like, what do I do with my time now? And also, like, you know, I am looking for the new, you know, the new side gig here.
Yeah.
To kind of fill the spot. And it worked out really well. So.
Yeah. And then, you know, as far as Cast Party as a live event, we were eventually able to do some stuff. I mean, the game that Deborah played in Antwets is an example of that, but it really never, we never attempted to go back into it at the scale at which we thought that was going to be our bread and butter, was like live in-person experiences. And the show, we thought we would all be there together in person, shooting an actual play show. We ended up delaying the launch of that because we're like, oh, this is going to wrap this pandemic up in a few weeks or a couple of months, and then we'll get back into production for the show. And it was increasingly apparent that that was not a realistic perspective. So that is how the show ended up being a podcast, because it was something where we were able to produce remotely, and also something that we sort of had the sense that, okay, maybe even if we are able to go into production, it looks like there's going to be these rallies and peaks with COVID, and production could be disrupted again and again if it's an in-person thing. If it's a podcast, we'll be able to continue production regardless of the trajectory of COVID. And so we're able to put out an episode continuously every 2 weeks now. So I think we launched in late December 2020. We put out an episode every 2 weeks since late December 2020. And if that was a show that we had to meet in person in a theater, no way. No way would we have been able to maintain that kind of a production schedule. So maybe that's, in the end, forced us to adopt a medium which is actually maybe more viable for us. But I think the transformation is going to be largely permanent. Like, I feel like for me, I'll do more in-person stuff, but I think my experience will continue to be 75% to 80% online.
I was gonna say, it's funny because everyone, you know, says how much they miss or want to return to the in-person. And maybe it's just because I started playing mostly almost all online. And even when we have started to see things open back up and do things in person, and I have played in person, look, there's just something about the online experience that I really like. I mean, I really like the idea, like, when you're doing it online, being able to throw whispers. Like, there were some times, I know I've played with Utah, where, like, I'm actively, like, whispering to the DM. I'm like, hey, I'm not talking to them right now. I just want to do this thing. And being able to chat, you know, through the texting, and being able to send those whispers to people who you are working with or working against, or you just want to have that aspect. I like that. And I will say that there, for all that it has grown so much for the last couple of years, Roll20 can be a wonderful experience if you go whole body, just throw yourself into the pool and say, I'm going to commit to this.
Yeah.
And I've had DMs, and I've DM'd in Roll20, and it's amazing what you can do with a digital version of what was traditionally an in-person tabletop game.
Yeah. I don't know if you agree with this, Rachel, but I personally, at this point, as a DM, I find it much easier to DM online.
I definitely agree. Like I said, the cruise was actually the first time I had DM'd in person in a while. And it was very much like just kind of that awakening of like, oh, I used to do this all the time and it felt easy. And now I'm really used to being able to just click a button and have the stats roll.
Yeah, like just have that tab open over there, just be able to like, oh, they wandered into a new area. I don't have a map. I'll just like quickly grab a map from something and throw it onto Roll20. Right. And like, I mean, you just would deal with it in a different way in person, but I'm just I feel like I tried to go in person now and I'm like, I'm forever knocking shit over or like misplacing something or like trying to hide this role and like this big mad scientist desk with all this shit in front of me. Whereas I've got my online setup feels very streamlined in comparison to that. I don't really DM at my own. It's New York, so I've got an apartment. You're not really going to do this here.
Right.
If I'm DMing, I'm going somewhere usually. And then I'm like bringing all this shit with me. You know, it's just a lot of stuff to haul around and to not lose or break. And I also like, I want it to look good. So I want like the terrain and the minis and all. It's like a pressure that I put on myself to create a good physical experience is a lot harder to live up to than creating a good online experience, I think.
Yeah. And even just, sitting down at the table, it's like you have to, you know, make sure that you can see and hear everyone, that everyone's going to have a good experience, you know, in that play space. And it's just a whole level that's just taken care of and really streamlined by the VTTs.
Katie, have you ever DM'd in person and does this terrify you?
So it's a complex question. I would say for our company, so the company that I run, Young Dragon Slayers, mm-hmm. I actually do all of our admin and our kind of managing. I'm sort of the like the dungeon master manager is sort of where I live.
Yep.
And that company, just by the nature of how we operate, is fully online because we have kids from all over the country. Mm-hmm. And so we have, you know, East Coast DMs, West Coast DMs, and then kids from across the US and Canada.
So you are the me of Young Dragon Slayers.
Exactly. But I am looking this summer to run our first kind of Young Dragon Slayers affiliated in-person experience for kids. And we'll likely DM as a part of that. And I'm hoping to bring more in-person game opportunities to my therapy practice. So I'm thinking, you know, our Young Dragon Slayer stuff will likely remain online indefinitely. But now that it feels more possible to be in person in groups on a consistent basis, and I'm feeling a little bit more confident that I know the game, those have been kind of the dual barriers to in-person stuff is, you know, I'm the only one in Charlotte. So if there are going to be games here, it'll need to be me.
Yeah.
And you know, are we at a place where it feels consistent enough to do that? And we're not going to have another big wave as soon as schools open again.
I know, you know, we did a whole episode about Dungeons and Dragons as therapy. And you touched briefly on the therapeutic effects of playing during the lockdowns. Does that echo your experience, you and your friends? Like, did it serve that role for you as well during that period?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Most definitely. I think, I don't know that we explicitly talked about, you know, oh, I'm working on this character because I want to explore this aspect of self or anything like that. Yeah, yeah. But man, did we all need to see faces of other people who weren't in our house? Like, man, did we need a problem to work on that wasn't COVID related and to feel like we still had something meaningful and purposeful to do with each other? And it was such an escape. And a much better way to feel connected, I think, than a lot of the obligatory Zoom happy hours of that time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, the early COVID Zoom happy hour where there's 25 of you and you're just staring at each other and you're like, what do I do now?
Mm-hmm. It provided a context and a framework for a meaningful but fun social interaction.
Exactly. So I think it absolutely served that purpose for us. And I think continues to serve that purpose for a lot of kids playing the game, but probably people playing the game at large.
I think you'd mentioned that you'd voluntarily transitioned out of acting in 2019, during that period.
And I'm in recovery.
Recovery, that's a good way to put it. So for me, it was like the transition in 2020 out of acting was less voluntary, right? It was more just like, oh, you're cold turkey because there's no gigs right now.
Scary.
But I found Dungeons and Dragons scratched a lot of those itches for me, you know, as a player and a DM. And I hope it did the same for you as well.
Yeah. Two of our three DMs who work with us are working actors and in the theater world as well. And I think that's something that I'm finding I'm craving more now too. Maybe life has settled down enough now that I'm like, no, I could be doing some character voices. I could be the one, you know,
getting
in there. Like I'm starting to feel that itch again. Which I also wonder if that's sort of a safety and routine thing. Like now I feel like I've got my bearings enough that like we can get back to more creative work. But to me, you know, that's definitely where I see my creative outlet being these days.
You know, there's this sort of cliche that creativity is fueled by really challenging circumstances or adverse circumstances. I, at least for me, I don't feel that's the case at all. I tend to create more from a place of stability. So I was able to DM because I just sort of was like, people need me to do this. I need to be doing something. But certainly, like during that period, there were I had some delusions about like, oh, now I'm going to write the great American novel. And that certainly didn't happen. Yeah, I was not able to write shit during that.
How many novels do we think got abandoned during that time? Like how many projects are still waiting unfinished somewhere?
I think I have crochet projects that never will get finished.
I tried to crochet. I made like little caterpillars and I could never get past that.
Before we close, I just wanted to ask if anybody had any final thoughts about this that we didn't touch on that you really wanted to, a message that you really wanted to get out or a memory or something like the best COVID D&D memory that you have, if you'd like to share one. This will be the time to do that.
So I don't have a memory to jump in with, but I did have a quick question because I know that we introduced Katie as from, you know, Young Dragon Slayers. And I had not really been super familiar with Young Dragon Slayers. And so I'm sure that there's going to be some people listening who aren't either. Katie, could you give us kind of just the quick, what do you do?
Yeah, that's very sweet. I really appreciate that. Yeah, yep. Young Dragon Slayers.
In my defense, I was going to let Katie do that during the plugs at the end, but go ahead, Katie.
Go ahead.
And you and I have spoken before, so I've not been holding any kind of a grudge over here. It was an unexpected tip of the hat. So lovely, but I've not been cursing your name on mute. Now, Young Dragon Slayers is an online company that runs D&D games for tweens and teens, so roughly 11 to 16. With an emphasis on social emotional learning and skill development. So they're not therapy games. They're kind of existing in that very loose therapeutic world where I really feel that kids naturally get chances to explore identity related issues and practice a lot of those soft skills that we didn't get during the pandemic just inherently as part of the gameplay. So we set up a safe experience for them that is supervised by adults where they can do that. And we are running games 5 evenings a week for kids in like Eastern, Central, or Pacific time zones.
Can we get the website one more time, Katie?
Yeah, absolutely. It's www.youngdragonslayers.com.
Rachel has been doing a super heroic job running kids games for Cast Party for a couple of years now with a lot of patience and a lot of creativity.
Yeah, I have a great time with them. It's always a lot of fun seeing the kids are always really creative, really enthusiastic. So it's always great seeing what they bring to the table.
Rachel, is there anything that you would like to plug?
I mean, there's a whole bunch of odds and ends all the time. my personal website is www.rachelwritesthings.com. I do writing, I do editing, both on a freelance basis. So if anybody is looking for a writer or editor for anything, feel free to hit me up. I do also do conversions of modules to Roll20. So that is also on the table if that is something that people need.
Yeah, Rachel recently converted my Secrets of the Blind Palace adventure, a Dungeon Master's Guild adventure for Roll20. And I could not be happier with how that turned out.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, so that is my personal website. And the big news on my end is that the 13th Doctor sourcebook for the Doctor Who role-playing game came out recently, which I had the pleasure of getting to write some material for. So if you are interested in Doctor Who, check it out. I think we did a good job with it.
Yeah, congratulations there again, Rachel. That's an amazing project to get to work on.
Thank you.
That's Cubicle 7 as well?
That is Cubicle 7, yeah.
And Deborah?
I will always say, hey, you guys, support public teachers.
Yes, support awesome. Public support our public schools, please. If we haven't got that, we haven't got anything.
Yes, yeah. I will maybe end us on a fun COVID D&D memory,
sure.
And I'll keep it in the realm of kids, since that's where we seem to be. And we were running Dungeons & Dragons Club during the pandemic, which I started during the pandemic. Crazy thing to do. And we had a day where we were running a game, and everyone consistently in a role at the game was rolling natural 20s, but no one had their, this was at that time where we were still like Zoom, but the camera off.
Yep.
So I'm sitting here like with my face on a computer screen, and like kids are like, yeah, I rolled a natural 20. I'm like, this is insane, guys. So I literally had emails coming into my inbox of like pictures of dice on
that's
floors,
adorable.
On beds. And I was like this, and then we made a little collage picture of all the natural 20s that we rolled that day.
Oh, that's awesome.
From our online COVID game.
That is a great COVID D&D memory. Really quick before we go, I will just plug, as I thought of it, because of Secrets of the Blind Palace. Secrets of the Blind Palace needs you, the listener, you, to go and buy it on Dungeon Masters Guild 19 more times, because then it will go platinum, and then Cast Party will make an actual play limited series out of it. So if you want to hear that adventure, well, first of all, the adventure is really good, if I do say so myself. So you will have a great time.
I can vouch for that. Yeah, having read through it, having turned it into a Roll 20 module, it is a really fun looking adventure. It's a great story.
Having played Secrets of the Blind Palace with Tal running it as a DM, I can attest to how wonderful it is as a player if you would like to run it for your own group.
Yeah, so that's a great point, Deborah. If you're sitting there asking yourself, what more can I do for Tal, who does so much for me? how can I wrap my arms around him in a virtual hug? What you could do is go buy that for $2.95 on Dungeon Masters Guild and make it go platinum. And then you can hire me to run it for you as a DM. I will be happy to do that too. And we will use the Roll20 conversion that Rachel Savicki created to do that. I'll run that online for you.
And then you can give yourself a gift, because if we as the community get 19 more purchases, what's going to happen, Tal?
Oh, yeah, we will be forced to create an actual play out of it. That will also be a lot of fun. Looking forward to someday getting to work on that as soon as you, the listeners, buy enough copies of that adventure. Awesome. Thank you all so much for joining me. Katie Lear of Young Dragon Slayers, Rachel Savicki, Deborah Paradise. It has been a pleasure. And listeners, we will be back very soon with a new episode of Podcast Party Descent into Avernus, and Power Word Talk will be back in June. Have a good night, everybody. Thanks very much for doing the show.
Thank you so much. This was a treat.